And so Paul, his enemies, they spotted him, they saw him. And then they moved the crowd, stirring up that hatred that they had to infect the people and creating mob rule. Always dangerous when you have mob rule. It's not like you're ruling by laws and authorities and constitution, but it's kind of a mob rule. I like what J. Vernon McGee says, as mobs generally do, this mob acts on assumption and misinformation. Always true.
As we gather, may your spirit work within us. As we gather, may we glorify your name. Knowing well that as our hearts begin to worship, we'll be blessed because we came. We'll be blessed because we came.
Aloha kako e komo mai. Welcome to As We Gather, the Bible teaching ministry of Calvary Chapel Honolulu with Pastor Bill Stonebreaker. Today, Pastor Bill continues in Acts chapter 21 with a message titled Running Full Speed with Brains in Neutral.
We'll be blessed because we came. Yeah, we'll be blessed because.
Well, actually, I took the title of this. We want to look at chapter 21 of Acts, verses 26 to 40. And I took that running full speed with brains in neutral. I took it from Warren Wiersbe. He mentions that, and I'll quote that this morning. But actually, I could probably title this, a better title would be Crises. And then as I end up, I want to look at the crises that we're in and how we are to interpret that and what we're to do with that. And I think it's we're to do with it just as Paul did in his crises. Remember, Paul had ended his third missionary journey. He came into Caesarea there by the sea. He was on his way up to Jerusalem, and he was warned that there is going to be persecution. There's going to be affliction and bonds that are going to await you. Agabus the prophet prophesied, took Paul's belt and bound his hands and his own feet and said, that's what's going to happen to the man when he goes up to Jerusalem. And Paul and people began to weep for him. Paul, we don't want you to go. And he said, why are you weeping? I'm willing to die for Christ. He had such a passion to share the word of God. And so when he got there, James, who is the pastor or the chief elder there, Paul began to tell what great things, the miracles that God was doing through the Gentiles, how they were getting saved and their lives were being turned around, and it was just a supernatural work of God. And James and the elders, they rejoiced in that. And then they said, and the believers that we have as well, they're zealous for the law. I thought, what a difference. Here, Paul was zealous for changed lives. And here, these were believers, yes, but they were zealous for the law. And we're going to find that they were saying, you know, Paul, there's some bad information that we got about you, that you are against. You're against the law of Moses. You're against all things Jewish. And so you've got a bad reputation here, and it's very hard to reach the Jews in this area because they know about you. And so they're resistant in receiving the gospel. So Paul, if you just do this, we've got four guys that have taken a vow. They're going to go in and go into the temple. If you just pay for them and you do the same thing, go through that ritual kind of washing and the shaving of the head and so forth. It's basically a modified Nazirite vow. You go in there and you're going to show the Jews that you're not against the traditions. In fact, you're keeping the traditions, and it'll kind of calm the waters here so that things will go well and we'll be able to have an inroad into the Jews here. And Paul, he taught that those things, he didn't teach against them, which the rumor was, but he was simply teaching that those things don't save. They don't save you. Only faith in the finished work of Christ. will save a person. And so it's never wise, because Paul gives into them, and he does go into the temple, as we mentioned last time, well, as we're going to see. He goes into the temple, but it's never wise to compromise your principles to accommodate others. And I gave an illustration of that last time. Because it backfires. It'll backfire on you. It backfired on Paul. Notice this in verse 26 of chapter 21. Now he's in Jerusalem, and he's in the temple. He's gone along with the Jews there, gone along with the council of James. And it says, Paul took the men, verse 26, those four, the next day, purifying himself along with them, and went into the temple, giving notice of the completion of the days of purification until the sacrifice was offered for each one of them. So he went through all the routines, and the Jews saw that. And so they think that Paul and these four guys are, gee, they're just one of us. You see, Paul was okay with taking the vow to keep the peace. He wanted to keep the peace. It wasn't to gain acceptance before God, but it was to appease the Jews so that they might calm the waters there. You see, Paul's motto was that I have become all things to all men that I might win the more. You can see it in 1 Corinthians 9, 19 to 23. He's always looking to advance the gospel, advance the kingdom of God. Notice it says in verse 26, and went into the temple giving notice of the completion, giving notice, or in other words, making sure that everyone saw Paul in the temple and the guys that he paid for, to remove the stigma that he was against the law and the customs. That's what he was seeking to accomplish. But notice what happens, verse 27. And we'll go down to verse 29. We'll deal with it in sections here. We'll go to verse 40 as well. We're actually in, if I can call it, crises in Acts 21, verses 26 to 40. But here, verses 27 to 29, it says, and when 7 days were almost over, the Jews from Asia, that's from the Ephesus area, upon seeing him in the temple, began to stir up all the crowd and laid hands on him, crying out, men of Israel, come to our aid. This is the man who preaches to all men everywhere against our people and the law and this place, the temple. And besides, he has even brought Greeks into the temple and has defiled this holy place. For they had previously seen Trophimus, the Ephesians, in the city with him, and they supposed that Paul had brought him into the temple. So Trophimus, one of Paul's converts and traveling companions and a man of Ephesus, where these people were from, Asia, in that area there where Ephesus is. These are the old enemies that gave him trouble in Ephesus. And now they're in Jerusalem, probably came up to Jerusalem. I don't know if they were looking for Paul. They might have been. They might have thought, you know what? We bet Paul's going to go there to Jerusalem for the Feast of Passover. Or maybe they just came up for the Feast of Passover. We don't know. But they recognized Trophimus because they were from the same city. And then they spotted Paul, who had ministered there for 3 years. So, you know, Paul would be known to them. And so it says, seeing Paul, now this wasn't an accidental glance where you're just glancing and you go, hey, I know them. It wasn't that kind of thing. The word means a long searching look. They were looking out for Paul. He might be here. Let's look and see. And so Paul, he wasn't in the inner sanctuary. He wasn't there. And we'll talk more about that. But he was in the outer court when these nemesis, his enemies, they spotted him, they saw him. And then they moved the crowd, probably went around from, you know, just the whole crowd, not just one little part of the crowd, but the whole crowd, stirring up that hatred that they had to infect the people and creating mob rule. And that's really what we're seeing here, mob rule. A dangerous thing during feast days, especially with the Roman government, because they can come down and slaughter the people to keep the peace. Because it is a very dangerous time. Always dangerous when you have mob rule. It's not like you're ruling by laws and authorities and constitution, but it's kind of a mob rule. I like what J. Vernon McGee says, as mobs generally do, this mob acts on assumption and misinformation. Always true. And so in verse 28, it says, Paul preaching. They were saying he was preaching against the Jews. No, he wasn't. That was a lie. You see, people, to make their case, they will lie about certain things. And so that's what they're doing here. And that he's against the law of Moses, or he's opposed the law of Moses. Now, again, that was not true. Paul was just saying, no, the law of Moses is not going to save you, give you a standing before God. You see, the law of Moses is simply a mirror to show you how dirty you are, how sinful you are. But he wasn't against the law of Moses, but the law of Moses was good as it was taught properly in its right place. But you see, that was a very, very serious accusation to the Jews. And it was something that these enemies knew that it would taunt. It would taunt, knowing that the Jewish people are especially zealous for the law at Pentecost and this celebration. Because the celebration of the Feast of Pentecost, it originally was the Feast of First Offerings, where your crops and your flocks, first offerings, but it had morphed a little bit. Yeah, the law said that. That's what the law said, and that was what this celebration was for. And so they would give their first fruits of their flocks and their crops and that kind of thing. And that would be the celebration, because the first fruits are God's, and then God blesses us after that. You know, you're giving to God and God is just blessing you. And that's what it is. But it morphed into something different. It had morphed into a celebration of the giving of the law on Mount Sinai. Well, yeah, it was the giving of the law, but that wasn't the emphasis here at Passover or at Pentecost. It was the celebration of God's goodness. You give God the first fruits of what he's given you, he's put you in charge of, and then watch him just bless. But they changed it. But you see, that was the tactic to infuriate the crowd. He teaches against the law of Moses, and that's what they were celebrating. He does. And notice he speaks against this place or this temple. Oh, man, they were just cornering Paul and just stirring the people up, teaching against the temple. And notice what they do. They add on to that, which was totally false, by showing his contempt for this place, this temple, by bringing a Gentile into the restricted areas, into that second court. Oh, they could be in the court of the Gentiles, that first court, but he brought them into that restricted area where it says anyone, any Gentile that passes this point will be subject to death. But Paul brought him in there. It just shows you how he despises the temple. That was so wrong. And that's really what stirred him up. Here, it's the temple in the New Testament times was surrounded by three courts. The innermost court was the court of Israel, where Jewish men would offer their sacrifices. Only consecrated priests actually entered the temple building itself, and only the high priest could enter the inner sanctuary on the most holy place once a year in the Day of Atonement. The second court was the court of the women, where the Jewish families could gather for prayer and worship. The outer court was the court of the Gentiles, open to all who would worship God. If any Gentiles went beyond the barrier into the second court, he or she would be liable of the death penalty. The Roman authorities, out of respect for Jewish religion, authorized the death sentence for this trespass, even for their own Roman citizens. So it was really an egregious thing to go past that barrier. You had the court of the Gentiles, you could stay there, but if you go past that, you're just tempting God and you're just defiling the religion of Israel. Warren Wiersbe says of this passage, with their emotions, speaking about the riot that was created, with their emotions running at full speed and their brains in neutral. These men argued, one, wherever Paul went, his Gentile friends went, two, Paul was seen in the temple, therefore his friends had been in the temple too. Such is the logic of prejudice. It's amazing. It's come into our political system and it just is just absolutely appalling. Oh, they're doing this because they want to get a political advantage here. They're doing this because they hate, you know, this group of people. It's just so distasteful. A.T. Robertson says of this, "This is the way of the mob mind in all ages. Many an innocent man has been rushed to his death by the fury of a lynching party." You see, these are the same people, the same men that previously planned Paul's death. Remember, it seems like wherever he went, planning his death, and now they're using religious bias. They're using religion to push their agenda to have Paul killed. Now, I don't know if we're coming in and possibly out of the coronavirus where our president wants to come out of it, put everybody back to normal on Easter. I don't know what kind of ramifications that'll have with the church. And you know it's going to bring a lot of criticism. It already is to him. He'd rather have people killed and have his work, you know, have his people back to work so they'll vote for him. I mean, they've already got an agenda, but there's something that very well may go on with the church. It's like the church, they want to have Easter services. Well, you're putting people in jeopardy. I'll deal with that toward the end of this because I think crises can work in our favor as it did with Paul. But you see, this religious bias, they're using that to have Paul killed. Islam does that. Oh, they spoke against the Quran, or they said something that was, you know, not nice toward Muhammad, and so they have a death sentence on them because of that. You see, that's when you use religious bias to get your agenda done. Well, that was them, but then it goes on, verse 30. "Then all the city was provoked, and the people rushed together, and taking hold of Paul, they dragged him out of the temple, and immediately the doors were shut." Verse 31, "And while they were seeking to kill him, a report came up to the commander of the Roman cohort that all Jerusalem was in confusion." There's a riot, basically, is what is happening. And this commander is in charge, and he better quell it, or he's going to be in trouble with Caesar. "At once, he took along some soldiers and centurions and ran down to them. And when they saw the commander and the soldiers, they stopped beating Paul. Then the commander came up and took hold of him and ordered him to be bound with two chains. And he began asking who he was and what he had done. And among the crowd, some were shouting one thing and some another. And when he could not find out the facts because of the uproar, he ordered him to be brought into the barracks." So they're dragging Paul here. We're in Acts 21, if you just tuned in, verse 30. We've gone down to verse 34. We're going to go to verse 40 toward the end. But in verse 30, they're dragging him. Interesting. Dragging him out to do him in. That's what they were doing. They wanted him out of the temple precinct because, you see, if they killed him inside, it was unlawful to have a dead body inside the temple precinct. So they didn't want to violate their religion, but they're willing, you know, in false knowledge to kill a man right there. You see, no dead bodies, lest the temple be defiled or the courts be defiled. Oh, well, yeah, sacrificial animals, that's okay. You see, at this point, when you think of it's gotten this far, where's the church? Where are those that were so zealous for the law? Where are those that had the idea of Paul going in there? Where are they? Where's James? You see, that's an interesting question, because it was their idea to have Paul go along with their plan to appease the Jews. And now it's turned out bad. And notice, even after that, when they were taken by the Romans into the barracks, into the Roman authorities, no one was there of the church to vouch for Paul. They didn't go there. They didn't come on Paul's behalf. It's a shame when the church won't stick up for its own. Too afraid of the authorities, too afraid of the people, too afraid of the compromisers. But that's what I'm seeing here. Well, the report came, verse 31, again, report came, crime in progress. And so the commander of the Roman garrison here and the captains, that's really the highest position here in the Roman army and stationed in Jerusalem during these feast days, because the city swelled some three times its normal size and normal population at that point. And so he was tasked with keeping the peace. And if he didn't keep the peace, then Caesar Nero would be on his case. And who knows, he could be put to death. Definitely, he could be put out of commission. But you see, the soldiers right there, they're now at the Antonia Fortress. And it was an area on the northern side of the Temple Mount. And it was built to where it can oversee. It could oversee the temple happenings there. It was the military headquarters, and the soldiers lived in that place. So they were on guard. They were ready, especially at the feast times. And so here they come. They come to figure out and find out what's going on. You have this commander who was, the term there, commander, is talking about commanding 1,000. That in that term, that Greek term, it deals with 1,000. Cohort is 600. A legion is 6,000. So you would have 10 cohorts in a legion. And then you'd have those that would oversee that. So this is a big deal. They're seeing that this is a riot situation. And so he's probably bringing down hundreds of soldiers, hundreds of individuals to stop this, what seemingly is a riot. And Rome would not tolerate any kind of riot.
And that's where we'll finish on today's edition of As We Gather with Pastor Bill Stonebreaker. This was a portion of a weekly Bible study from the book of Acts, chapter 21, titled Running Full Speed with Brains in Neutral. You can hear this message again by visiting CalvaryChapelHonolulu.com and take advantage of our vast media archive. We really appreciate any support or feedback that we receive from our listeners. If you'd like to financially support the As We Gather media ministry, you can give securely online through our website, CalvaryChapelHonolulu.com. May the Lord richly bless you as you walk with Him today.
As we gather, may Your Spirit work within us. As we gather, may we glorify Your name. Knowing well that as our hearts begin to worship, we'll be blessed because we came. We'll be blessed because we came. As we gather, may Your Spirit work within us. As we gather, may we glorify Your name. Knowing well that as our hearts begin, we'll be blessed because we came. Yeah, we'll be blessed because we came. As we gather, may Your Spirit work within us. As we gather, may we glorify Your name. Knowing well that as our hearts begin, we'll be blessed because we came. Yeah, yeah, we'll be blessed because we came.
Next time on As We Gather, we'll continue in Acts chapter 21. Until then, aloha and agape.
We'll be blessed because we came. We'll be blessed because we came. Yeah, we'll be blessed because we came.